Number 470 is, Do You Know My Jesus? And that's exactly what we're going to talk about tonight. Do you really know God? Have you really stopped to think about just how well we really know Him? Have you spent any time thinking about the faithfulness that God has shown to His people, to the covenants that He made to them, and to His plan for salvation, to what He has planned for you and me, and how faithful He is to making those things come true? Well, what is a covenant? A covenant is literally a coming together. It's a mutual understanding between two parties, each binding himself to fulfill his obligations. But they don't necessarily contain the idea of a joint obligation. It can be one party taking on a single obligation for himself. He has an expectation usually of the other party though. And so we see God's covenant going forward, the promises he made to Abraham, and we will see that he didn't break a one of those. By the same token, we should expect that God's not going to change, that he's going to be the same with us today. The first covenant that we see that God made, called by that name, is with Noah before the flood in Genesis 6, verses 17 and 18, when he said he was going to destroy the world. But he saved Noah and his family because Noah was righteous and blameless before God. He was a man who walked with God. What a nice thing to say about somebody. God's covenant with Noah after the flood in Genesis 9, he talked to Noah and his sons, made a covenant there, and he said, I'll make it with you and your descendants after you, the animals and everything that came off that ark. I'll never again destroy the world with the flood. He made a covenant with Abraham in Genesis 12, and there it's not called a covenant because God told Abraham, leave your country, your people, and your father's household and go to a land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you, I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. God later calls that a covenant in Genesis 15 and 18, where he talks about the land side of it. God had an expectation, though, from his people. In Exodus 19 and 5, he said, Now if you obey me fully and keep my commandment, then out of these nations you will be my treasured possession, and all the whole world earth is mine. You will be my kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you are to speak to the Israelites. And that's God talking to Moses about the people. We see a little later that this covenant that God had made with his people, Moses sprinkled blood on the people and talked about that blood as part of the covenant. In Exodus 24, 5 through 8, in verse 7 he says, Then he took of the book of the covenant and read it to the people, and they responded, We will do everything the Lord has asked us to do. Moses then took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, This is the blood of the covenant that the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words. God had an expectation of Abraham when he had made that covenant with him. And in Genesis 17, 1 and 2, he says, Walk before me and be perfect, talking to Abraham. And I will multiply you exceedingly. God's covenant with his people in Deuteronomy 4, where God's speaking out of the cloud, and he's giving the Ten Commandments to Moses, and he declared unto him the commandments. He wrote them on two tablets of stone, and the Lord told Moses, he commanded me, he says, at that time to teach you the statutes and judgments, that you may observe them in the land when you cross over. Moses discusses God's covenants and renews them in Moab. We see it in Deuteronomy 29. And he goes down in verse 4, and we see Moses had done miracles and signs as signs of God's power. Verse 4, he says, "You have seen all that the Lord did before your eyes in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his servants and in all the land, the great trials which your eyes have seen, the signs and great wonders. Yet the Lord has not given you a heart to perceive and eyes to see and ears to hear to this very day." Verse 9, he says, "Keep the words of this covenant and you will prosper." God's people knew what God had promised them, but they also knew what he expected of them. The whole litany of what happened is rehearsed in Psalms 105. Down in beginning in verse 7, he says, "Look to the Lord and his strength. Seek his face always. Remember that the words that he has done, his miracles, the judgments he pronounced, O descendants of Abraham, his servants, O sons of Jacob, his chosen one, he is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. He remembers his covenants forever, the word he commanded for 1,000 generations, the covenant he made with Abraham, the oath he swore to Isaac. He confirmed it to Jacob as a decree, to Israel as an everlasting covenant. To him, to you, I will give the land of Canaan as a portion you will inherit." So we see all the parts of the covenant that God had made with Abraham: land, people, and then the promise of the Messiah through Christ come to pass. Because the people claimed the land under Joshua, they became a great nation in size. And of course, we know about the grandeur under David and Solomon. And then we will see in a minute about the new covenant that comes through Christ. Peter reminded the Jews on just after Pentecost in Acts 3 that they were the children of promise. The covenant had been made with their fathers. They were the seed that shall be the kindred of the earth, and through them all should be blessed. Unto you, first God, having raised up his son Jesus, sent him to bless you in turning you away from your iniquities. Jeremiah prophesied of a new covenant in Jeremiah 31 and following. He says, "The time is coming when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. It won't be like the covenant that I made with your forefathers when I took them by the hand and led them out of Egypt. Because they broke my covenant, though I was a husband to them, declares the Lord. This is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel after that time, declares the Lord. I will put my law in their minds. I'll write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. No longer will a man teach his neighbor or a man his brother, saying, 'Know the Lord,' because all will know me, from the least to the greatest. For I will forgive their wickedness and remember their sins no more." That's the promise that you and I have. This new covenant is restated in Hebrews 8. As we see the ministry of Jesus being superior to that old covenant. And he says, beginning in verse 9, "It will not be like the covenant that I made with your forefathers and took them by the hand and led them out of Egypt, because they were not faithful and turned away from them, declares the Lord. This is the covenant." And he goes on to say that, finish that covenant out, and he says, "For I will forgive their wickedness and remember their sins no more." If we look back at the children of Israel, time and time and time again, they repeated their sins. But they could not get them to the point that God would not remember them anymore. God had a plan from the beginning, we see in John 1, for us. It says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning, and through him all things were made that were made. Without him, nothing else was made. In him was life, and the light, life was the light of men." The light shines in the darkness. but the darkness has not understood it. In Colossians 1, verse 16 and following, it talks about the forgiveness of sin. Talking about Jesus says He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by Him all things were created, things in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by Him and for Him. And down in verse 18, and He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything He might have the supremacy. We see the blood of the covenant, the new covenant, being talked about in Luke 22 and 20 and in 1 Corinthians 11 and 23, where the Lord's Supper is being talked about and the blood being talked about, the blood of the covenant. This is the cup of the new covenant in my blood. Whenever you drink it, do it in remembrance of me. And of course that we know that in Hebrews then, in Hebrews 9:12, it says, and Jesus entered the most holy place, a place where nobody but the high priest could go, but He entered heaven, the most holy, in this case heaven, by His own blood. For this reason, because He could enter with His own blood, we see Christ as being the mediator of the new covenant of those who were called, that those who were called may receive the promised eternal inheritance. God chose people from the beginning. He chose Noah and Abraham. We talked about Noah because he was righteous and blameless before Him. Abraham for the same reason. In Deuteronomy 33 and 26, it describes who those people were and what God thought they should be. The writer says, blessed are you, O Israel, who is like you, a people saved by the Lord. He is your shield and your helper and your glorious sword. Your enemies will cower before you and you will trample down their high places. These were the people that God expected His children to be. And they were protected by God. We know that God had blessed them through Abraham's promise. Then over in the New Testament, we see a couple of places where it talks about under the New Covenant, whose God's chosen people were. They weren't necessarily the children, well, they weren't the children of Israel, but they were anew, if you will, children of Israel. 1 Peter 2 and 9, it says, but you were a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you're the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. And then this morning, Frank talked about from Ephesians 1, verses 3 through 13. These people are also called being adopted as sons, that they may receive the inheritance. For He chose us before the beginning of the world. That's God's people. To be holy and blameless in His sight. In love He predestined us as sons. In Him we have redemption through His blood, the forgiveness of sins in accordance with the riches of God's grace that He lavished on us with all wisdom and understanding. Verse 11, in Him we were also chosen, having been predestined according to the plan of Him who works out everything in conformity with the purpose of His will. That's that plan that goes back to John 1. Well, what can we learn from Moses as a deliverer, and how does he compare? What parallels do you see between there and Jesus? In Acts 7, 35 and 36, in Stephen's speech before the Sanhedrin, he talks about Moses as a deliverer, one sent by God, a ruler and deliverer, but he was one who was rejected by his own people. just as Jesus was rejected by his own people. But he was the one sent. He led them out of Egypt, did many wonders and signs in the sight of all those in Egypt, and particularly at the Red Sea and for 40 years in the wilderness. Moses prophesied about Jesus. In Deuteronomy 18, verses 15 and following, it says, "The Lord will raise up a prophet like me from among your brothers. You will listen to him." In verse 18, the Lord says, "When they say what they say is good, I will raise up for them a prophet like them from among your brothers. I will put my words in his mouth, and he will tell you everything that I command him. If anyone does not listen to my words that the prophet says, I myself will call him into account." That's quoted later in Acts 7 and in Acts 3. And the same way with Jesus. We know that he did a lot of miracles as well. He raised Lazarus from the dead, among others. He made the lame walk and healed the sick. And of course, we remember in John 20 and 30, it says that Jesus did many other signs and miracles in the presence of his disciples, which were not recorded in the book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. Let's look further at the parallels with Jesus. And as Moses led the children out of Egypt through a baptism, if you will, in the Red Sea, they drank of the same spiritual rock as described in 1 Corinthians 10, and that rock was Christ. But they also, after they came through the Red Sea, grumbled and worshiped idols and fell away. Jesus, in the same way, leads us from the bondage of sin through baptism to drink of that same spiritual rock. In Romans 6 and 3, it says, "Oh, don't you know that all of you who are baptized into Jesus Christ are baptized into his death? We are therefore buried with him through baptism into death, in order that just as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, we too may live a new life." The children of Israel murmured, worshipped or the gods, followed those false goods, and forsook the worship that the Lord demanded. And he was not pleased with them. The lesson for us in all that is, we don't need to get caught up in our own spiritual wilderness like those people did and turn away, because we have the same problems that they do, potential problems, if you will. We have our own idols. It may not be a little carved god or a little stone icon, but it's power or money or our possessions or our job. But we all have our own idols. And we for sure don't need to forsake the worship as those people did. Murmuring, being discontent with where we are and what we have, always wanting something more. It's not necessarily bad to want something better, but we have to keep it in perspective of what's real and how we need to act before God. In 1 Corinthians 10, let's look there for a few minutes, because not long ago in the study with the senior high class, that's a chapter that always kind of enthralls me a little bit, and part of the reason that I did this study. We look at it from the standpoint, there's an example of what happened to God's people way back then. And Paul's talking about it in light of, don't make the same mistake that they made talking to a church in Corinth. This is a Gentile church. It's not Jews from old, but he's saying don't make the same mistakes. We're another generation, if you will, down the road, church-wise. We've got two to look at. I guess I need to do it this way. And say we've got two to look at. And we don't need to make the same mistake that they did, either in the Old Testament times, New Testament times, because we've got the same example coming to us today. Well, let's look at 1 Corinthians 10 a minute. For I do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of the fact that our forefathers. Watch the pronouns here. Gentile church, remember? Our forefathers were under the cloud. They all passed through the sea. Figuratively, Jew and Gentile passed through the Red Sea. And that's part of the parallel that I'm trying to pull together for you tonight. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea. They all ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them, and that rock was Christ. Nevertheless, God was not pleased with them, and their bodies are